And we're going to launch into this subject, but with a few comments before we start. Mind control is one of those things that people don't like to talk about, including yours truly, frankly. And, you know, but I got into it, and I saw the evidence, and it was, you know, there it was. Now, officially, MKUltra was a CIA mind control project that lasted about 10 years. Let's say from 1952 to 62, 63. Before it started, there was Artichoke and Bluebird. Those were other projects, mind control projects of the CIA. And after it ended, supposedly in 63, an office called ORD, Office of Research and Development, took it over. Now, their job, we don't know about. We're not sure of everything that they did because that information is not available. It's in 130 boxes of material somewhere, maybe in Langley, Virginia, and they won't release it. But various people have said that they employed more sophisticated measures than MKUltra to do mind control on people. I think one of the reasons that this is such an important subject is because we're looking at people here who have a certain attitude about life itself, and these people are in the government, and they are in important positions in the government. And in order to understand what they are really about, we get a look at them which is unprecedented by looking at what they did with this kind of experimentation on humans. In other words, they hate life. Okay? That's pretty clear. They have their own version of life, which is like death. And that's where their life is. And that's what they feed off of. And I would say that most, if not all, secret societies are based on the same concept. Once you cut through all of the paraphernalia and the symbology of secret societies, you're basically dealing with people who have, for one reason or another, given up on life completely. They are now into the form of life that is involved with death. That's their territory. And it's a pretty horrendous thing to say, but I think that it would be borne out. My own feeling is that we're talking about a confluence of different influences here on individuals that go back a long way into the past, into the families, the history of families in which they grew up. I'm talking about long-term history, what those families are, and these are people who are entirely functional but entirely psychotic, if you want to use that psychological term. It doesn't really do it justice, but it tells you something about them, I think. And I'm talking about people like John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles. I would say very good examples. Look at their faces. Look at what you see there. You see almost nothing. There's a kind of mask-like quality about these people, an emptiness, very competent people who go about their business, who seem to have no feeling or juice for life. And I would say that these people are often born into families who go back centuries, possibly, in that kind of disconnected condition from life. And while they are able to function very successfully in society and deal with power, because that is their ticket and their coinage, they find that control and destruction of life is the only thing really that gives them life. And since I have read this information that I'll be sharing with you tonight, I'm beginning to come to the conclusion that the people who are involved in the nuclear weapons scenario really want to destroy the world. That is, it isn't a question of, it may seem obvious to say, but they see that as liberation, if you can wrap your mind around that, as a release from what they consider to be an oppressive situation that just simply can't be tolerated. They see destruction as liberation. And so the only thing that would hold them back, I think, from destroying the world is the feeling that they may not have the playground left in which to enact their scenarios of destruction. There would only be one, and that would be the explosion that would take care of the planet. So I would say that this is what we're dealing with. And I would put up as a model against that on the other side, although this man is not, you know, a messiah by any means, but if you know any of the work of Wilhelm Reich, the psychiatrist who broke away from Freud, he developed an entire psychology around the concept of liberation of energy. Liberation of energy from within the person that was locked up. And it was really the first time, he was the main figure in the history of Western psychology, let's put it that way, which is a recent effort, to simply say that we're talking about energy here, and that freedom and the release of free energy from a human being against blocked up channels gives you what's called life. That's life. And of course, he was destroyed by the government. He had a device that he was an energy accumulator device. He was arrested because a federal agent posing as a buyer or a distributor of that device offered to take it off his hands and bring it through state lines. And so he was served a subpoena to appear before the federal government that involved illegal interstate commerce. And his comment was rather naive. He said, "How can they possibly serve me? That's politics. I'm talking about science." And so he didn't honor the subpoena. They put him in jail and he died. He was talking about fantastical things like plumes of blue energy shooting out of the top of a person into the sky when this kind of liberation of energy would occur. He said that the energy that creates clouds and storms and weather is the same energy that we have inside ourselves. It's identical. And he called the unit of it an orgone. And he invented these wild machines that were able to supposedly maneuver this energy around. I won't go into that in this talk, but he's a fascinating person, and I always hold him up as an example of somebody who ultimately stands for the other side of things, which is life. So the reason that you find some of these fascist lunatics involved with magic and occult sciences and heavy, heavy, heavy symbology and all of that is because within these secret societies, they are dealing in death as life. If you could imagine life as a kind of hourglass, you know, and they fall through the top into the very skinny part and out the bottom, and they see that as being a form of living, and they take their sensation and their thrills from some sort of upside-down version of life. And I wanted to paint that little sketch before I started because we're going to get into some pretty strange territory here. And I want to say that I think this is basically what's going on. And it's important to know that these people occupied key positions in our government and still do. And they are unaccountable. And it tells you something about what is called a democracy. I've brought some testimony together into this book called U.S. Government Mind Control Experiments on Children. It's a compilation, basically, of testimony that was given in Washington. And before I read from it, while I can still remember, I want to make a few announcements, a little bit about myself and about the people that are here tonight. This is Deep River Books. She Who Remembers is taping this talk. Tape is available afterwards. I'll probably forget to remind you, and Jeannie will stand up and say something. Ralph Cole of Justice Vision is taping, videotaping here. He's also been taping meetings of HEAL, an alternative AIDS group, which is doing some excellent work in bringing some truth about AIDS to people, and he has some of those tapes available too if you'd like to see him. Of course, this book is upstairs at Deep River, and so is another book of mine called AIDS, Inc. that I wrote in 1988. I'm an investigative reporter for about the last 15 years, and I basically have been investigating what I call medical fascism, which I believe is the mechanism by which people are going to be dragged into a brave new world if that is the outcome that we unfortunately end up with. That issue is not decided. But because the medical world has such great authority with people, they believe so much in doctors and experts, they are going to try to make that move. They are going to try to bring people to heal under the aegis of medicine. They are going to try to say that they know science and that therefore you have to listen to what they say. And if they say take a drug or you're suffering from a germ, there is no questioning that. If they say you're detained or quarantined, there's no questioning that. I see that as being something that is, you know, coming around here. Now, this testimony was given before the President's Committee on Radiation in Washington on March 15, 1995. We had three people that went up there from New Orleans. Valerie Wolfe, a therapist, and two of her patients, Claudia Mullen and Christy Nicola. God only knows how they got in and testified. I've heard the story from Valerie. I still don't even believe it, but basically she told the screener up there, the person who was screening applicants to speak, about cruel and unusual radiation experiments on Americans. She said, well, I have patients, and they are saying that some of these doctors who administered radiation administered mind control to them, so we want to talk. And they said, okay. They testified, from what I can gather, for a very short period of time verbally. They submitted a lot of testimony to the committee from other therapists and other patients, and they somehow got in. Nobody knows how, but they got in. And that opens a certain kind of door for us, because it puts it on the record and it gives it a certain legitimacy. And what these patients essentially said was that from the time they were 4 years old, 7 years old, they were tortured by the CIA and the military. You can call it something more sophisticated, but it really isn't. It involved electroshock, physical torture, lights, spinning tables, hallucinogenic drugs, sleep deprivation, isolation tanks, hypnosis, mind programming with commands, layers of trauma that induced buffer zones of amnesia between the traumas and essentially thereby created multiple personalities. Because, as one psychological theory has it, if you induce enough trauma, you get a split in the personality because the person can't face the pain, and so they put that part out of it and they come with a new personality. And if you keep doing it, you invoke or create different personalities, and then if you are the CIA, you try to program these sub-personalities to do different things like memorize information photographically and not remember it, do courier operations, assassination operations, sex agent blackmail operations, all of this. Now, I must say that I think that some representations of this kind of operation are a little too neat and clean. That is, people assume it's like, you know, okay, we'll create 37 personalities now, we'll program each one, and then we'll enter these commands, and then call it up, and da 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 da. I really doubt that it works that way. I think in many cases, it's a total washout. In many cases, it's just psychosis time, madness. In many cases, I don't know, people are killed because they just don't respond and they will not stand for it, no matter what is induced. So, there are two tracks here, and these are the tracks. There is testimony by people saying, this was done to me. Okay? And then you decide if you believe that or not. Then over here, there are attempts to verify through obtaining documents from the CIA and the military that such experiments did in fact go on, to create a parallel track of research to give credence to what these people are saying over here, because, you know, there are many good people who want to say this is all nutcase territory over here, and we don't want to know about it, and frankly, I don't blame them. So the researchers have said, the ones that are really into this, we want to try to document it as well on the other side. And efforts have been made in that direction and continue to be made in that direction. And so let me introduce into the record, and it would be nice if we were all sitting here in front of Arlen Single Bullet Theory Specter and people like that, something called Volume 7 of Recent Advances in Biological Psychiatry, The Proceedings of the 19th Annual Convention and Scientific Program of the Society of Biological Psychiatry, Los Angeles, May 13, 1964. The officers of this group include Ewan Cameron, MD, psychiatrist from Canada, that many will recognize as possibly the major monster on the planet as far as mind control. Much has been written about him. I'm not going to talk about him much tonight. Now, in part one of the table of contents, we have the following paper: Automatic Nervous System Responses in Hospitalized Children Treated with LSD and UML. And one of the researchers is Loretta Bender. Now, Loretta Bender cannot be nailed down as being a CIA employee. She was, in fact, in 1961, a president of the Society of Biological Psychiatry. But she was part of a small group of researchers who were doing early LSD research, most of whom were doing it for the CIA. She attended conferences where those people showed up, like this. And she attended at least one conference by the Josiah Macy Foundation, which was a conduit and front for CIA money. Now, the paper is rather lengthy, but I'm just going to read you a few things from it. This is not part of the book. In the children's unit of Creedmoor State Hospital, with a resident population of 450 patients, ages 4 to 15, we have investigated responses of some of these children to lysergic acid and related drugs in the psychiatric, psychological, and biochemical areas. Two groups of boys receiving daily LSD, UML, which is a methylated derivative of LSD, or psilocybin. At first, the medication was given weekly, but was eventually given daily for periods of up to several months. Okay? And dosages remained constant throughout. LSD 150 mics, which is a standard for an adult trip. Psilocybin 20 milligrams daily, or UML 12 milligrams daily, all given in two divided doses. The average duration of treatment was 2 to 3 months daily. children 7, 9, 11 years old. Now, the psychiatrist who sent me this told me that he has a statement at home, which he's going to fax to me, that shows that in several cases, at least with these children, this was carried on for several years daily. Now, of course, all of the testimony here about what happened to the children is they got nothing but better. These were autistic, retarded, a loose term signifying really nothing, but autistic or schizophrenic children. That was the diagnosis. And they all responded, became more straightforward and here and whatever. You decide. Okay? So that is a very significant piece of evidence here. That shows that as early as 1964, the CIA was in fact experimenting, or a person with probable CIA connections was experimenting on young children with LSD and other similar drugs. Okay? You want to turn that light away from me, please? Now I have here a staff memorandum given to me by Harlan Girard, a very active researcher in this field, to members of the Advisory Committee on Human Radiation Experiments from the Advisory Committee staff, June 27, 1994. And this is a summary of the CIA, its history and its activities. So in other words, members of the Committee on Radiation staff submitted this to the committee at large to kind of clue them in on what the CIA is prior to the 1995 hearings of the President's Committee on Radiation. And they say, in the 1950s and 60s, the CIA engaged in an extensive program of human experimentation using drugs, psychological, and other means in search of techniques to control human behavior for counterintelligence and covert action purposes. This is quite an admission. In other words, they're training agents, it says here, by using mind control on them. It doesn't say they're using mind control just to sort of get information from foreign agents. The possibility that the CIA itself engaged in human radiation experiments emanates from references in a 1963 CIA Inspector General's report on Project MKUltra, which was a program concerned with research and development of chemical, biological, and radiological materials capable of employment in clandestine operations to control human behavior. Now, in the rest of this report, they indicate that they cannot find any records of specific radiological experiments carried on by the CIA. And obviously, they are looking. This doesn't look like a total whitewash. But, you know, that doesn't mean you believe them. It just means that those records could be destroyed or hidden away, deep hidden away, because everybody agrees that radiation is a bad thing, and the CIA, last thing they want is for people to believe that they used radiation on people, you know. So, but this does indicate that there was a reference about research and development of radiation by the CIA for purposes of employment in clandestine operations to control human behavior. How the hell do you use radiation in clandestine operations to control human behavior? Well, I would suggest that you use it to traumatize people whom you are training as agents so that you gain control of them and you therefore have them under your thumb and they do what you want them to do. And the testimony here tends to bear that out, that radiation was used on people as a method of inducing trauma, not as a way of testing, you know, does radiation cause harm, which is sort of the gist of the President's Committee on Radiation. They went halfway. They said, terrible things were done to unwitting Americans. Radiation was used by doctors on them in hospitals. But This goes further. We are now talking about a whole other level, because those other experiments supposedly were carried on, you know, with a misguided effort to see what toxicity levels were like, unfortunate occurrences, things got out of control at times, isolated individuals did commit crimes, you know, but they were attempting to do medical research. And that's one of those, like, hypnotic phrases, right? I mean, I could probably put everybody to sleep just by sitting here and saying, medical research, medical research, medical research, medical research, medical research. And, like, people would reach into their pocket and come out with money, man, you know? Well, hey, yeah. Cancer, infantile paralysis, you know, MS, whatever you want, I'll give you money. Medical research, right? That's like what politicians know. That's a key they turn all the time. When they can't figure out what else to say, they say, we need more money for research, right? And that means, you know, tax money, and it means things that you don't want to be subjected to most of the time. So Valerie Wolf is something else. This woman is down in New Orleans. She's seeing patients that other people won't see. Therefore, they tell strange stories. These are patients that have been fired by other therapists, right? They're very unruly, out of control. They do not recover. Nothing works. They cut themselves. They go into hospitals. They try to commit suicide. They are people that therapists generally flee from. And she says, let's go. That's her scene. So it stands to reason she would hear stories that other therapists tend not to hear. And in her statement to the committee on radiation, March 15, 95, she says, the research programs, meaning that her patients were submitted to, included radiation, drugs, mind control, and chemicals. My clients and others have reported all of these as being used on them, although technically they were considered to be part of the mind control experiments. Generally, it appears that therapists across the country are finding clients who have been subjected to mind control techniques. The consistency of their stories about the purpose of the mind control and torture techniques, such as electric shock, use of hallucinogens, sensory deprivation, spinning, hypnosis, dislocation of limbs, and sexual abuse, is remarkable. There is almost nothing published on this aspect of mind control used with children, and these clients come from all over the country, having had no contact with each other. From the small sample of therapists to whom I talked, it appears that about 25% of the clients report memories of being used in radiation experiments. It is possible that more people were exposed to radiation, but that the memories have not yet emerged because our awareness of this experimentation is so new. Let me say now, before we get into further, that the one organization in the United States that tries to debunk all of this is called the False Memory Syndrome Foundation. They are based in Philadelphia. They say that any recovered memories in therapy, that is, any patient who goes into therapy and recovers a memory, is a liar or unintentionally lying because his therapist induced it, suggested it, guided it, okay? Now, I talk to these people, and at certain levels, they are very well-meaning. Of course, that's always the way. And I talked to their PR person, and, you know, and she said, I said, well, when were you born, this organization? She said, 1992. I said, well, how extensive is it? She said, we have a chapter in every state. Now, for anybody who's ever been an activist or worked in a nonprofit 501c3, are you kidding me, man? You've got a chapter in every state in 3 years? You're cooking. You are cooking. And in foreign countries, they have chapters, too. But no foundation money and no government funding. This is like, you know, they're like walking on water, you know? What? It took McDonald's longer. Yeah, it took McDonald's longer, right? So there we go, right? That's the False Memory Syndrome Foundation. Individual contributions. Now, the deal is, it is true. Now, that organization was founded by Pamela Fried. Her daughter accused her and or her husband, I'm not sure of the exact circumstances, of abuse as a child, see. And in the resultant uproar, they founded this organization. And Frontline on PBS did an entire episode on all of this.